This is the Dreamers Podcast, episode 44, with certified financial planner Shahara Wooten. Today is November 16th, 2021.
There's this beautiful equation called the net worth equation, and it's assets minus liabilities. We need to measure our assets and we need to look at our liabilities, list those out, subtract them. And is that a positive number or a negative number? If it is negative, please don't beat yourself up. Work on reducing the liabilities to get that number positive. In the category of live, that is understanding your cash flows, income in, income out. But a lot of times we always look at the money out and just like, okay, how can we curb the expenses? But any wealthy people have multiple streams of income. How do we build more than one income stream? It's in my book, but it was like 65% of the wealthy have at least three income streams. So focusing on living by adding your income streams as well, and then savings. But when we save, we need to protect what we save. So in that section of the book, I'm talking about estate planning, insurance, take advantage of getting insurance, creating an estate plan, will and trust, etc.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I am Stephanie Annies, also known as Annies Wealth. I'm a financial coach and an author. I self-published my first book, Dream of Legacy, a guide to help dreamers reach financial independence and build generational wealth. In this podcast, I'll have conversations with experts and thought leaders who dare to follow their dreams. You'll hear about their journey and their money stories. I hope it inspires you, dreamers out there, to live life on your own terms.
Come on, dreamers, let's change the world!
This podcast is brought to you by Dream of Legacy. Check out dreamoflegacy.com for resources to assist you on your journey to financial independence. Before we get into today's episode, please take a couple minutes to go into Apple Podcasts, if you're listening from an Apple device, to rate and review the podcast. If you appreciate the free resources that are provided in this podcast, then the best way to let me know is to do just that. Reviews help the podcast be more visible, and it helps other dreamers discover the podcast. So thank you. I appreciate you. And now let's get back to today's episode. Hello, welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I'm your host, Annelise Wealth, and I'm so glad that you've decided to join me today for this week's episode of the Dreamers Podcast with Shahara Wooten. Shahara is an author, speaker, a financial life planner strategist, and the founder of Your Story Financial LLC, a virtual fee-only fiduciary boutique firm committed to helping women and STEM professionals move from unsure to confident about their financial decision. She's also the author of newly released In the Meantime, Own Your Financial Narrative. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. The types of habits we should develop to secure our financial future, the mistakes to avoid when it comes to investing, and what we can do today to create a path to financial success. So here is Shahara Wooten.
Shahara Wooten, welcome to the Dreamers Podcast.
Thank you, Annelise. I'm so excited to be on here. I appreciate you for having me.
Absolutely. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
There's a lot of things that, you know, encompass Shahara, but I think the main thing that I'm out here in terms of promoting is financial literacy and closing the racial wealth gap. And so I just have a passion for that. And as a certified financial planner, I help others. I help people really put together a financial plan to help them to create generational wealth. And it's not just linear. It goes all over the place because life can go all over the place, but I help people get organized. And I do call myself a financial life planner strategist, just because when you go through life financial, it's not just about creating like one financial plan. Financial planning is actually planning. It is an act. And so it constantly evolves. You're constantly doing planning and you're constantly adjusting based on life experiences. So that's what I help people with.
Lovely. I think I read somewhere that there's only 5% of certified financial planners who are Black.
What I saw was like 3%, but either way, it's under 5%. It's a very small amount of certified financial planners that are Black. It's horrible. Yeah.
You said earlier that you were passionate about closing the racial wealth gap. Can you maybe talk a little bit about how, as a financial planner, you can help do that?
Yeah. So let me give a little background too, just to help people understand the context of what that all means. Well, the racial wealth gap is, I mean, there's just been a history in the United States of exclusion. So especially excluding Black Americans. So with that, there's been this, I guess, repercussion to the Black community and even just to the U.S. in general of us as Black Americans being behind in terms of overall wealth. And so with that being said, there's a 228-year gap between mm-hmm. Black families and white families. And then if you look, there's a statistic from 2016 that states that $17,000 is the makeup of Black wealth, whereas white wealth is $171,000. And then another statistic is saying that by 2053, Black mm-hmm. wealth is supposed to go to zero, which is just astounding to me. And I wrote a book about it and I'm trying to be a part of the solution. So that statistic never gets a chance to come to pass. Like, we're not going to let that happen. So thank you for warning us. And so now people like me, we can all link up so that we can make sure that that doesn't happen as much as in our power.
It's very interesting what you just said, because it's that same statistics that made me want to write my first book. And just like you said, of the solution, because we definitely don't want that to happen.
Absolutely.
So, and I think it starts with financial education.
Yeah, it starts with that. And the reason, so I called my book In the Meantime, Own Your Financial Narrative. So what I do is I do put in financial education, but I also put in some of the history so people know like why this all happened, like why we even have a wealth gap. And it's beyond sometimes just us and mm-hmm. the lack of education. Sometimes it's just also exclusion and the challenges of getting even a mortgage, or the fact that my ancestors, we came out of the enslavement and didn't get anything. Whereas I have many folks that if you look at the Homestead Acts and things like that, land was just given to people. Mm-hmm. But yet and still, we built this country under duress and toil and didn't get a dime. So then there's that, because you got to understand there's these outer forces working against us. But in the meantime, until economic justice is served, what do we need to do? How do we learn about our money? How do we know, like, how to build our net worth? How do we invest? How do we grow it? How do we save? How do we protect? And so that's where I wanted to sprinkle in some of the history, but then also some of the inspiring stories of people. Despite all the outside forces, they're like, wait a second, we can change the narrative and we can just work this through community, through learning, and even just understanding the history as well.
So, I love that.
Yes.
Go back to your childhood. Can you share an early memory that you have when it comes to money and how that shaped your views about money as an adult?
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of my first memories, and I actually share it in my book because it was such an impact to me, because I am a saver. So if you look at people, some people just are so free with spending. Sometimes I envy them. And then some people are just like, oh, I'm not going to give any money away. And or I'm not going to do. But you got to find this harmony, this balance with it all. So one of my first memories is that when I was in third grade, I remember my dad, I just started learning math, just started learning addition, subtraction and multiplication and all this. So my dad, he gave me $20, and it was around Christmas time to buy Christmas gifts. And I have two sisters and mom and dad. So I knew immediately that what I'd had to do was to spend $5 on each person, because 20 divided by 4, right? So it was like, wow, this is cool. And it was just like that memory of knowing math and how it all related to the money. And then I went to a place called Woolworth, which has been long closed, but I think there's some other internationally. I think there might be some Woolworths, but I was able to buy my mom like some powder and my dad something that I can't remember, and my mom, my two sisters. And I remember coming home after I made my purchases and I told my dad, hey, daddy, I was able to buy everybody a gift and I still have money left over. And he was like, good job. Very good. And it's just funny to me because I don't know why I was trying to get discounts or whatever and have some money, but I had some money left over even for myself. And I just remember my dad encouraging the fact that I was able to buy some items and then still have something left over. So there were so many learning experiences that throughout the years, I was just like, oh, as I grew and became more mature with that, I started to think, well, you can give money away. You don't always have to keep it for yourself, or you should sometimes treat yourself. So there's so many different lessons, and everybody was happy with their gift. And like I said, I don't remember what it was, but I think it was just that whole act of giving, saving, and spending, like all in that one transaction. And that was my first, and those behaviors were encouraged. And so I really appreciated that. For me, I just didn't like owing anybody anything. And as I grew, I saw people use credit cards and it seemed like a good idea, just even as a young child. And I was just like, I don't want to owe anybody. You mean like I would spend that and then I have to pay somebody back? And that just didn't work for me. I didn't like that concept. So that was one of my first memories about money. And yeah, thanks for asking. It's just not everybody has that, but that was a fond memory for me.
It's funny how our early experiences shape our views. There's a statistic that says by age 7, we kind of have formed our attitude towards money.
Interesting. That's a really neat statistic. Yeah.
And so I guess it's very important not only to tell your kids, or if your parent, do this or don't do that, but also like they pay attention to what you're actually doing. Are you doing the things that you're saying that they should be doing?
Absolutely.
When it comes to money, are you stressed?
Yes.
And it impacts how we view money as we grow up. So
I
definitely something too that we have to keep in mind.
Yes, and I agree. And I think sometimes there's like shame put around spending. And I've talked to quite a few people, like even I have a program that I've developed in interviewing people. I found there was quite a few people telling me that they don't want to have to spend their money. They save it. And so now there's this shame around that. And then there's this shame around I spend money too much. Just finding that harmony with saving, spending, and giving, and then investing it. There's got to be a way that you can do all of those things. And they have their place depending on where you're at in life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so you started your career as an engineer.
Yes.
But now you own your investment advisory firm. Talk to us about that pivot. What made you decide to make the transition and how did you go about doing it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that is a neat story. So when I graduated from college, I felt like I had a good relationship with money. I remember living in Philadelphia and it was my first permanent job. I had been on an engineering and sales program. So I was part of sales and all of that. And I was 25 years old. I went to Urban League Young Professional meeting and it was this huge hall and it was called the Economic Empowerment Meeting. So there were insurance agents, financial advisors. Honestly, I'd never seen a financial advisor. I think I had heard of them, but I remember walking up to this bank and a man was representing this particular bank, a huge bank. I won't even name their name, but I said, you know what? I'm going to walk up to him. I'm 25 and I'm going to tell him that I want to retire by 30. And I'm 25 at this time, mind you. So 30 seemed ancient at that time. Now 30 is not ancient. So anybody that's out there, 30 is not ancient. But at that time, it did seem ancient. Now I did know 5 years was a short period of time to say that you're going to retire. So I did know that. But I wanted to see, can this financial advisor help me? Like, is that what you guys do? I don't know. So I'm just going to give him this challenge. So he looked at me like, and then somehow I was able to get his information. And then we ended up a big corporate building of this particular bank. And I met with him because we were going to open up an account. I remember walking away with papers. And then I was just like, so now what? And weeks had passed, months had passed, and there was no account open, nothing. And I was like, what is that about? So I started to really take it upon myself to learn more about financial planning, learn more about saving, learn about what is an emergency fund. At the time, I had been stocking away in a 401k, but that's because of what I heard. And I heard that's what you should do. But I didn't even know that I should have an emergency fund. Now, this is stuff that I learned myself. And so over time, I was just like, you know what? People don't learn this. How do we not learn this in school? And it was just really intriguing. My dad would give me information like Rich Dad, Poor Dad type. Robert Kiyosaki had some courses and I remember doing that and just really tried to taken as much as I can. So before I was 30, actually, I did change careers. So instead of retiring at 30, I changed careers and moved from being an electrical and computer engineer and mostly working in the sales side of that industry and became a financial professional. And I sold to financial planners and financial advisors. And that was a while ago. And then without telling my age, no, but I could do that, whatever. So and then from there, went and started working with a retail company so I could work with individuals. And then from there, I realized, wow, this company focuses on assets and things like that. And if there's a wealth gap, then working for a financial advisory firm that focuses on assets, then it's going to be very difficult to help the people you want to help because they hadn't yet accumulated those assets. So there was just a lot of friction in that area. And that was an eye-opener for me. Like, oh, wow, they pay you based on assets, but the people that are attracted to me because of the wealth gap don't have the assets, but they do have good jobs and they can pay me.
So do you mind, like, for listeners who might not be familiar, who have never worked with a certified financial planner, when you say they focus on assets, can you elaborate on what that means exactly?
Yeah. So basically, it means that if you go, I wasn't a certified financial planner at the time. I was just a financial advisor. And people would come to me and they would say, hey, I want to work with you. And I would look at their portfolio. So we would look at their bank accounts, look at their brokerage accounts. So accounts that they have, also look at 401ks, et cetera, IRAs, all these different accounts. And the majority of them were starting from zero. So they hadn't started accumulating that. And so when I say assets, a lot of those financial advisors get paid from you investing those assets with them. So they might get a commission from that. They might get a fee from that, whatever it is. That's the only way they're paid. They potentially can't help you, or you're not going to be someone that they really want to work with. If we're talking about you starting out and maybe the only thing you have in your budget is $50 a month or $100 a month, that equates to pennies pretty much for a financial advisor. So if they're being incentivized to get assets to build their businesses and make a living, then they're going to be looking at people who have the 100, the 200, the 300, the millions. And so that started actually not resonating with me and creating some friction because I got into it to help people. And I just felt like, wow, these people I'm helping, but honestly, I wasn't compensated, right? So we all have to, it's a circle, right? So I have to be able to make a living. You have to be able to make a living. And yes, I'm going to start you out at the $50 a month because I believe that's what we need to do. And then we'll build you up. But the business model behind the scenes, and a lot of the clients had no idea, that business model wasn't conducive to me. And it's not conducive to a lot of Black financial planners and advisors. So therefore, and that takes me to what I do now. So back in 2016, after my eyes opened and I was in the trenches and I was helping people, but I felt like, you know what, I can impact more lives if I change. And what I changed over to was more of a fee only model. And with that model, I'm allowed to be more of a fiduciary and I don't get incentivized to sell you a stock or sell you a bond. I really focus in on what are your values? What are your goals? What is your vision for your money? And then that person will then pay me based on that and helping them with their financial planning. So it's been an evolution, but in 2016 is when I changed into owning my own firm and really aligning with the values that I have and how I want to help people. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you had a fiduciary responsibility to your clients. Can you explain what that is and why it's important?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So when I was working at the other firm, we were not allowed to call ourselves fiduciaries. And that also became an area of friction for me. I was like, well, why can't we? So I wanted to be a part of something where it's not that, yes, I was working in the best interest of my clients because I felt what I needed to do was in the best interest, but I couldn't call myself a fiduciary. So what a fiduciary does is like what I just said, we provide unbiased financial advice and we work in the best interest of our clients. So we have to put our clients first in terms of the decisions that we make. And the way advisors get paid helps with that. And obviously, there's really great advisors that may not be able to call themselves fiduciaries, but I just wanted to just remove any doubt and be a part of the side of the business where I could call myself that and then operate under that. So that was also a reason why I became a fee-only fiduciary financial planner. And it just aligns better with me and how I want to help people. Yeah.
And also, you mentioned that you were a fee-only financial advisor. And I think the other structure is the financial advisor gets paid a percentage of the total assets that they manage for you.
No, actually, our industry can be so confusing. So fee-only is really where you don't get paid a commission. So a commission is also a percentage of assets. But as a fee-only financial advisor, you can get paid as well a percentage of people's assets. So the biggest differentiator is, does your financial planner get paid a commission or not? Because whether you're fee-only or commission-based advisor, there is a percentage of their assets, if you're managing assets, that you'll get paid. But the term commission is what probably better used.
And so the commission is based on whether they get incentives to sell you things. Is that what it is?
The commission is based, like, for instance, you get a different commission if you sell a stock versus a bond versus a mutual fund versus an exchange-traded fund. So they have different commission structures. So it could potentially make an advisor feel like, oh, wait, I get paid a higher percentage if I sell you a stock. So now you're selling somebody a product rather than focused on the solution and what that client actually needs. Whereas a fee only, they'll get paid a percentage, but they don't get paid any different for recommending a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, or exchange traded fund. So the pay is not different.
So tell us about your personal finance journey. What do you invest in?
So I'm a very big invest in the things that I tell my clients. So I'm very big in long-term investing. I'm very big into diversification and asset allocation. In terms of any particular companies and things like that, I would not be able to share that on here because I don't want to misconstrue that as advice. Because when you work with a financial planner, everybody's going to have something different. Everybody's going to have different goals with their money. So what I do is I'm big on, what is your goal with your money? Is this a long-term bucket of money? And I talk about that in my book too. Is this a long-term bucket of money? So for my long-term bucket of money, I'm going to have things that might be more risky, but again, it's towards my risk tolerance. So you got to know your risk tolerance and your time horizon. If it is a midterm, so say I've got a goal to buy a car or something like that, I can put away, if it's 5 or 10 years or 15 years, like anywhere between the 5 and 15 year mark, that would be called a midterm goal to me. And so that's where we would be able to put into maybe a mutual fund or exchange traded fund or stock. It just depends. And so I have things all over in the various types of investments. And then with short-term goals, 5 years or less, that's where we don't want to have it in something that is risky or something that could happen like March 2020 when the market just tanked. And if you have your short-term money, and something like that in March 2020 was the month that you needed to have access to that money and it went down by 20% or so, then that was not a good investing decision. So you want to really focus on, what are my goals? What's my time horizon? What's my risk tolerance? If you have a 5 year or less window, then we don't want to be investing in risky investments. I'm a big proponent of, okay, in that case, then we need to be in a high yield savings, or we need to be in the short term bonds or a CD or something like that. And people don't like to hear that, you know, especially folks who are like risk takers. Uh-huh. They're like, I don't want any cash anywhere, but you need that for the emergency fund. You need that when the AC goes out in the house, or when we had Snowmageddon and here at Dallas, Texas, where the temperatures were below freezing and people's pipes burst. Now, all of a sudden, I don't want to pull from my investments to pay for that. I need to pull from the money that I've saved and has a very low risk. So I think the more important question is for everybody to look at, well, what is your time horizon? What is your risk tolerance? And what is your goal with that money? And that's the philosophy that I use in how I invest my money, and then also how I help people with their investment decisions too.
So what are some of the financial habits that we should develop to secure our financial future?
Oh, that's a great question. So gotta always go back to the book, because I wrote a whole book about all this in the meantime. And so I divided the book into 4 sections. One is called build. Then there's live, save, and give. So I believe we need to build our net worth. So one habit to really focus in on is understanding your wealth. So if we're trying to close the wealth gap, we need to start tracking our wealth. And there's this beautiful equation called the net worth equation, and it's assets minus liabilities. So we need to measure our assets and we need to look at our liabilities, list those out. And then after you list them, subtract them. And is that a positive number or a negative number? If it is negative, please don't beat yourself up. Work on reducing the liabilities to get that number positive and just continue to work towards making that number positive. So basically, you're either going to be paying down the debt or adding assets. So really taking the time to figure out how to build that up. And then in the category of live, that is understanding your cash flow. So I'm a big fan of income in, income out. But a lot of times we want to cut back on expenses. Like we focus when we look at money in and money out. We always look at the money out and just like, okay, how can we curb the expenses? But any wealthy people have multiple streams of income. So if we could look at that side, again, income minus expenses, right? So again, it's a lot of equations, but how do we build more than one income stream? So I believe it was like, and I got to go back, it's in my book, but it was like 65% of the wealthy have at least three income streams. So focusing on living by adding your income streams as well, and then saving. So of course, saving. But when we save, we need to protect what we save. So in that section of the book, I'm talking about estate planning. I'm talking about insurance. I'm also talking about the history of our experiences as Black Americans with insurance and how insurance companies used to exclude us and used to charge us more and all this just crazy stuff. But today, there's better systems in place. So take advantage of getting insurance, take advantage of creating an estate plan, will and trust, etc. And then the giving part. One of the things I learned was that Blacks in America, we are very philanthropic. And so I even saw someone say the other day, like, I want to give $25,000 to my HBCU. So in there, I talk about donor advised funds. It's like a poor man's foundation. There's things that we can do as we're building our wealth. You also want to get in a practice of giving as well. I know that most people are in that habit, but also just be mindful of balancing things out. As you're building your wealth, what can you be giving away? Even as you're paying down debt, you should be having a habit of giving too. So those are the four areas I would say.
Perfect. So can you talk about some of the most common mistakes that you see clients make when it comes to investing?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Some of them I alluded to earlier, but I think the first thing is not having a vision with the money. So I just want to invest. Okay, well, that's not deep enough. So when you are figuring out, like, what are my goals with this money? What do I want to do with it? I say, keep asking yourself why. So after you give yourself an answer, well, I want to do this because I want to build wealth. Okay, great. Well, why? Because I didn't grow up with wealth. Okay, why? Because you just keep asking that and you get deeper and then you realize, wait a second, I want to buy a property and I want people to live. I want my family to be on it and I want this. And so you start to get really detailed with your narrative and your story. The other mistake that people might make is not really knowing their risk tolerance. I know that people like, and you just hear everybody talking at the water cooler. Now at the Zoom, I don't know, whatever. We may not have the water coolers anymore, but you hear people say, well, I'm investing in this and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. But you just got to have a better feel for, you can't just invest just because people are saying that they're investing in these things. Then I would say another thing, I'm big into long-term investing. Sometimes it's like watching paint dry. It's not as sexy. It's not as cool and exciting, but people like Warren Buffett and that paint dry, what I'm saying is a quote that he's even made. That's what investing's like. When everybody's getting in, you might not want to be getting in. When everybody's getting out, that's when you want to get in. I mean, just opposite it seems. And people, they follow the trends and, oh my gosh, did you guys see this? And it's just, if you just are consistent and you just automate things, just take $50 a month, $100, $500, $1,000, whatever a month, and automate that. Try not to think about it. And you take advantage, especially with investing, you take advantage of a term called dollar cost averaging, and you're picking a date, you're picking a dollar amount, and you don't have to think about it. So today, oh my gosh, the market went down, but you just invested anyway, because this is still a good day to invest, right? So that's another big thing is people might think that they have to time the market and figure out when's a good time. Well, just be consistent. You don't have to think of it. You're probably already doing a lot of that with your 401ks. So it comes out every pay period and you invest. And when the market goes down, you don't think about it. When the market goes up, you don't think about it. Do that with your own money. Automate a lot of the things that you have, because that way you don't even have to think about it. Set up those systems, because if you automate it, it'll just happen and you don't have to think about it. I would say one more thing that I think people need to do is like create buckets of money. So if this is for paying for my bills and all of that, that's that bucket. If this is for spending, that's that bucket. It gives you that freedom. Like, okay, this is the amount I'm putting in the spending bucket. And I give myself this every week. And then this is what I'm doing. So all my bills are taken care of. My saving is taken care of. You just got a foundation. Everything's automated. And then that way I can spend on things because I've already taken care of my giving. I've taken care of my bills. I've taken care of my saving. So just automate and put it into different buckets.
So for any of the dreamers that are listening and they are interested in finding out more about your book, In the Meantime, Own Your Financial Narrative, can you talk a little bit about what are some of the things that we can do to own our financial narrative?
Absolutely. Yes. So I said a lot of them already with the build, live, save, and give. So if you guys rewind that and then just buy the book and read it, so that's one thing. But then the other part that I have not mentioned, and this was also a motivation for me writing the book, is I start out my book talking about Black Wall Street. And it was destroyed in 1921. So this is the 100-year anniversary. This is the year 100 years ago that it was just completely annihilated and destroyed. And so at this time in 1921, they were recovering. Many of the Black Americans had moved from Oklahoma. It was done in Greenwood, Oklahoma. Some of them stayed and they started rebuilding and things like that. But what was powerful about them is that it was such a power of community. And I think that that is the part of things that we can't do this by ourselves. Owning your financial narrative, it is yours and it's your personal thing, but we got to link up with others and do it together. So I think it's really important to find someone you trust, find a community of people that have a like-minded, and they're doing these things. We're having this discussion because a lot of times we're not talking about it. We might be going to brunches and enjoying ourselves, going to parties, but we're not talking about any of that. So we got to create space for being community and having the conversation about our money and how are we going to help each other grow our money and hold each other accountable together.
I love that. So Shayara, I'd like to end the interview with a round of rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Can you tell me about a book that changed your perspective on life?
Wow. Just one book?
Feel free to share more than one.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the Bible. I know people are like, oh, but the Bible changed my perspective on life. I will tell you, so much information in there about money, about giving, about living, being a life of character that changed my life and it's changing my life. And then if we talk about something more conventional would be just Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was a big life changer for me.
What's one thing about money you wish you could tell your younger self?
It's fluid. Yes.
What's the best investment in yourself you've made so far?
Taking the time to find my purpose and what I wanted to do in life, how I can make an impact.
Filling the blank in three words or less. Money to me is...
Ooh, three words or less. Oh my gosh. Money is a tool.
What do you want your legacy to be?
I want my legacy to be that I helped others and followed the leading of Holy Spirit, honestly.
Okay. Well, Shayara, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Can you please tell the listeners where they can find your book and where they can find you?
You can find my book on Amazon. You can find it on Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, online, Apple iBooks. And you can find me, I would say, go to Instagram. My Instagram handle is at Money and Moves. And you can find me on all the other social media platforms as well.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's Shayara Wooten. Can you imagine that we're almost at the end of the year? Next week is Thanksgiving in the US. And after that, next thing you know, Christmas will be here and it's going to be 2022. Well, we have a few more special episodes until the end of the year, so stay tuned. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Dreamers Podcast. You can find the episode show notes and all of the links mentioned at dreamoflegacy.com. If you liked today's episode, Here's what you can do to support me and help more dreamers discover the podcast. Follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate and review the podcast to help the podcast gain more visibility. Share the podcast with your family, friends, and coworkers. And if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a second to tag me at thedreamers.podcast on Instagram and let me know what you liked about today's episode. All right, dreamers, that's it for today. I will see you back here next week for another episode of the Dreamers Podcast.
Okay, dreamers. Time to build this legacy.
This podcast is for general information purposes only. It is not intended to provide any tax, legal, financial planning, insurance, accounting, investment, or any other kind of professional advice or services. Please consult with an appropriate tax, financial, or legal professional to receive appropriate advice based on your situation.